From the intersection of religion, government, and politics, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy. This week we're broadcasting from the Ring of Fire Studios in Pensacola, Florida. This program is made possible in part through the generous support of State of Belief listeners just like you. Thank you. Please visit stateofbelief.com and help keep this show on the air. Bending the arc toward immigration justice, a fiery, independent, progressive media voice, and a first-person Supreme Court update, that's what's coming up in the next hour on State of Belief.
We've said all along, we don't believe in a comprehensive fix. We want to go in a step-by-step approach to try and address the problem, which is our broken immigration system.
While we've seen little progress on Capitol Hill regarding immigration reform, many committed activists continue to push for action in ways that are both creative and inspiring. Communities across the country are seeing Fast for Families initiatives. Houses of worship are offering sanctuary, and clergy are offering leadership and prophetic witness. And on April 3rd, Bend the Arc, a Jewish partnership for justice, will present House Majority Leader Eric Cantor with a united message calling for congressional action on immigration now. On this week's show, I'll be joined by Bend the Arc CEO Stosh Kotler.
It's another brick in the wall that says that a corporation is a person, and therefore when a corporation commits a crime or when a corporation makes a product that kills people, you not only can sue the corporation, but you can sue the CEO and you can sue the shareholders, because the separateness, the veil that's supposed to protect the corporation from the individual, has been broken.
Mike Papantonio has become a fiery, independent, progressive media voice in this country. With the precision that you'd expect from a good trial lawyer, Mike is not only an incisive commentator, he's also a keen observer of the political and cultural scene. And on this week's show, I'll talk with him about how he sees things shaping up in the midterm elections he knows and the role the media will play in determining the outcome. But first,
during Tuesday's arguments, the court's three female justices said allowing companies to object could open the floodgates to religious objections of all sorts. Justice Elena Kagan said, one religious group could opt out of this, and another religious group could opt out of that, and everything would be piecemeal and nothing would be uniform.
Last week, Dr. J. Michelson briefed us on the impending oral arguments before the U.S. Supreme Court in the Hobby Lobby case. That blanket name has been adopted to cover two suits, really, involving private employers, Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Wood Specialties, the owners of which insist that complying with the Affordable Care Act's provisions regarding contraception coverage for their company's employees would violate the owners' religious convictions. As we outlined here last week, the outcome of this case, which we don't expect to know until sometime this summer, could create unprecedented and wide-ranging exemptions not only in health benefits for workers, but in just about any other area of employer-employee relations. And as Jay, who is an attorney himself, pointed out, there is no reason that those same exemptions would then not also apply to customers of a given business, paving the way for an avalanche of lawsuits that would require courts to determine, among other things, which beliefs are validly religious, and therefore, ultimately, which religions are valid. You think this isn't important? Dr. Michelson spent Tuesday at the Supreme Court for the 90 minutes of oral arguments in the Hobby Lobby case, and he's kind enough to come back and join us again today for a follow-up, which I can't wait to hear. Jay, thanks for being back with us on State of Belief Radio.
Always a pleasure, Weldon.
You know, it might have been a little tongue-in-cheek, but last week you described the decision before the justices as potentially leading courts to determine in the future whether corporations are going to heaven or hell. So which of those places do you think Tuesday's Supreme Court session went?
Well, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I'm not alone in doing so. The questions that came from the justices really should give us pause. There were a number of questions that really did seem to indicate that Justice Kennedy, who's the swing vote for this case, may actually rule for Hobby Lobby and against the government. And, you know, the most remarkable piece is just what you just said a second ago. There was almost no discussion of the actual weirdness and ludicrousness of a company having a conscience and, you know, going to heaven or hell. In fact, the entire conversation was purely on the legalism of that question, whether Congress meant corporations to be persons under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And it does seem certainly that Justice Kennedy, as well as the four conservative justices, agreed that they are.
Did anything that any of the justices asked or shared as an opinion of their own stand out for you as extremely important, significantly important?
Well, you know, there are really three questions in the legal case. The first is whether corporations are covered by the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. That means whether they're persons under the law. And it does seem, as I just said, it does seem that they are. The other two questions are whether there's a substantial burden on those corporations from complying with this or that law, in this case, the contraception requirement of Obamacare. And then if there's really an interest that justifies that burden. And I really do think Hobby Lobby went 3-for-3. We've just talked about the personhood question. It was seen that there's most likely a substantial burden by either paying a tax. The conservative justices insisted on calling it a penalty if they don't comply, not offering health insurance to their employees. And then that there was no really compelling state interest that justified that intrusion. And that, I think, for those of us who are concerned about basic reproductive freedom and just autonomy and fairness, we're very concerned to hear that there wasn't really a compelling state interest here.
I was able to listen to Cecile Richards talk a little bit about what went on in the court yesterday, and I think she was very taken by the aggressiveness of the three women justices, and particularly early on in the arguments. Did you feel that and then it go downhill from there, or did you take any hope in what the women justices did?
Well, I mean, that was absolutely the case. I have to say, I found, and I wrote about this in an article in the Daily Beast, I found the argument really depressing, because it really did seem as though people were playing to type. On a case that's largely about contraception and equality for women, there was not a single woman at the council bench on either side of the case. And it did seem as though the only justices who were concerned about this law's effect on women were themselves women. And it just felt really dispiriting to me that we somehow, you know, the only people who are going to stand up for the rights of women are the three female justices on the Supreme Court. That I find, I think more of our country and more of our Supreme Court than that. And so it was actually quite dispiriting to see that in action.
Was it a matter, Jay, of just ignoring what the women justices had asked or said, or was it contradictory to what they had asked or said?
Well, I think all three of them really did a good job of pointing out the slippery slope, right? So if Hobby Lobby and other corporations are people, you know, what about the next few cases that come down the pike? Is it a case, what if a company wants to make all of its employees wear the burqa, for example? Mm-hmm. That actually came from Justice Kennedy at one point. What if there, you know, you can think of a million kind of slippery slopes. As you discussed earlier, why couldn't a company also discriminate against customers as they can discriminate against employees? And that, you know, that argument was pretty well made, that kind of slippery slope argument. But when it then came to the technicalities of the law, that's when the conservative justices really attacked the government's position. And I have to say, it's not personal about the Solicitor General, but the government's argument really collapsed under the questioning of the conservative justices.
Mm. Jay, I know that you probably stood in line for a long time waiting to get in the court. What was it like outside the court that morning? Did you hear a lot of debating back and forth, or what did you hear?
Well, it's funny. You know, I'm a member of the Supreme Court bar, and there's a separate line if you're a member of the bar. And I did wait for 3 hours from 5:30 to 8:30. The argument was at 10. They let us in at 8:30. Interestingly enough, I was sandwiched on both sides by conservatives, including one of the law firms that's pursuing these lines of this line of cases. You know, and I think when we get to the level of abstraction, and we're all, you know, we're legal professionals, as you know, I'm also an ordained rabbi and do some faith work in this area. You know, we're trying to be collegial and civil, even though these guys on the other side are trying to take away my basic rights, which I'm not doing to them. So I do think it's sort of asymmetrical. But when we emerged from the court, it was anything but civil. There was a. It's interesting that the moderate right did not show up. It was snowing in D.C., so it was only the hardcore that showed up. Yeah. But some very extremist posters on the right, obviously pictures of aborted fetuses and outrageous comments. And on the left, it was a coalition of the ACLU and Planned Parenthood. And I have to say, because I'm on State of Belief, the constituency that I felt was really missing were progressive voices of faith. Mm-hmm. I think, and I've written about this also, one of the real challenges is that the most central absurdity of this case, that corporations have consciences and that this can't possibly be a sincere religious belief of a corporation, that may be beyond the reach of the law. We need voices of faith out there kind of attacking this line of argument in theological terms, in religious terms, in philosophical terms. And unfortunately, we did not show up yesterday, either inside or outside of the courtroom.
I have to ask, did you hear anything that gave you any hope?
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, where there's the only weak link, I think, in the Hobby Lobby argument was on that legal technical term of substantial burden. And, you know, Justice Kennedy, it's all about Justice Kennedy. It was very clear. I mean, Justice Thomas is silent always, so he didn't say anything. It was very clear that Justices Scalia, Roberts, and Alito were on the side of Hobby Lobby. There was no doubt. And it's very clear that Justices Kagan, Ginsburg, and Sotomayor were on the side of the government. So it's really, and Justice Breyer as well, on side of the government. So it's really coming down to Justice Kennedy. He did seem reluctant to say that this was really a substantial burden, either to offer the coverage or to pay the tax instead of offering the coverage. And I think that may be really our only hope. I don't think he was persuaded by the slippery slope arguments. You know, they can rule on this case narrowly, and we're just going to have to wait and see. You know, one, and this is, I'll try not to get too technical on the law. You know, the Hobby Lobby lawyer basically said each of these cases is different. And if you're a conservative jurist, not necessarily conservative politically, but if you're a conservative jurist, as Justice Kennedy is, you hate that kind of result. You hate the what? So we're going to unleash a flood of litigation and every case is different and there's no rule that we have to decide these cases. So that's an area where, as a conservative jurist, not as a conservative political figure, Justice Kennedy may not like the consequences of unleashing a flood of litigation as every company claims a different religious exemption.
Jay, if you will, just one more question, because I think these kinds of cases related to so-called religious liberty are going to keep coming up. Will you just say a word for people who are confused that this really is not a case for religious liberty, but a case that could greatly harm religious liberty?
Well, sure. I mean, in my Jewish tradition, contraception is morally good. Especially if it's going to prevent an unwanted pregnancy or health danger, anything like that. If I'm an employee of Hobby Lobby, and there are 6,000 female employees of Hobby Lobby, about 14,000 male employees, if I'm an employee of Hobby Lobby and cannot afford the $1,000 a year that it might cost to get contraception, I've just had my right to decide my own religious morality taken away from me. My boss has decided that for me. And in all of the legal niceties of is a corporation a person, we do know that these women are people and that they are having their religious liberty taken away by their employers.
Dr. Jay Michelson holds a Ph.D. in Jewish thought and a J.D. from Yale Law School, an articulate activist and academic. Jay is the author of 5 books, and he writes frequently about the ongoing assault on religious liberty that's going on in this country. You can follow his work at jmichelson.net. I encourage you to follow his work. Jay, I'm so grateful to you for being our wise eyes and ears in the Supreme Court chamber yesterday. I don't like your report any more than you liked giving it, but we need to hear it and know that religious liberty in our nation is not secure. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Bend the Arc, a Jewish partnership for justice, is a national organization inspired by Jewish values and the steadfast belief that Jewish Americans, regardless of religious or institutional affiliations, are compelled to create justice and opportunity for all Americans. Stosh Kotler assumed the position of Bend the Arc CEO in February of this year, and since then we've been looking for an opportunity to talk with her about her vision for the organization. With their current campaign to spur action on immigration reform in the House of Representatives, this seemed like the perfect time to have her on the show. And so, Stosh Kotler, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much, Reverend Gaddy. I am so pleased to be here.
Well, listen, first of all, congratulations on being in that job, and I have been hearing great things about what you're doing.
Thank you so much. It's thrilling, and it's quite an honor.
Right now, you're gathering signatures to present to Majority Leader Eric Cantor on April 3rd. Would you please talk about that whole initiative?
Absolutely. I'd love to. So American Jews believe that now is the time to pass immigration reform that is comprehensive, compassionate, and that's just. And this moment that we're in, it's not only a crisis of governance, but it's also a crisis of conscience for our country. And that's what has motivated us to take this action right now and to put pressure on Leader Cantor to push this issue for a vote in the House. And, you know, I'd like to just tell you a little story. My grandpa, Leo, he's the father of my father. He came to this country when he was just a boy. And he came to this country when he was fleeing violence in the Ukraine. He came with one of his siblings. They were smuggled out in pairs. And he came from a very poor family who managed to sell everything they had. And with that meager savings, they bought a couple of diamonds, they sewed it into her shoe, and together they traveled across the ocean. Mm-hmm. And when they got to this country, they were let in. And the reason why they were let in is because the immigration laws at that time, which was about 1918, they were so much more generous than they are today. Mm-hmm. And the story of immigration, it really is the American experience that so many of us in the Jewish community can relate to. We know profoundly what it's like to be strangers. We know deeply what it means to seek a better future for our families and for our community. And for that reason, we feel obligated. We feel that this is a moral imperative, that we do absolutely everything in our power to continue to push for comprehensive immigration reform. And luckily, there's a meeting between Leader Cantor and some members of the Jewish community who live in his district. And Bend the Arc's taken initiative to start a petition. We're hoping to gather tens of thousands of signatures from Jews across the country in coalition with other Jewish organizations to put pressure on Leader Cantor to remind him of his Jewish roots, to remind him why comprehensive immigration reform is the just and fair thing to do. And for anyone who's interested, you can also sign your name to this petition. If you go to entrydenied.org, you'll have a chance to read the petition, to sign on, and help Eric Cantor know that your voice matters and that all of us, all Americans, want to see comprehensive immigration reform done now.
Stosh, I have read your material, and now I have the pleasure of listening to your voice, and in both I hear optimism. And I have to ask you how you can be so optimistic when so many other attempts have seemingly failed to do what you're trying to do.
I do feel optimistic, and I feel like now is the window where all of us must act, and we must act in concert. And I feel optimistic because we have just seen how much undocumented immigrants contribute to our country. We see how significant their contribution can be and has already been. We're a country that is built from the immigrant experience. You know, when we think about this issue, it's so critical that we think about it not only in terms of its political ramifications, but also really as a moral and ethical issue. And it reminds me, you know, we're coming upon the holiday of Passover, which is a story of liberation. It's a story of what it means to be a people who were once enslaved and who find themselves liberated. And this liberation story is known not only by Jews, but by many people across the country and across the world. It's the story of the Exodus. But another story that runs throughout the Passover holiday is the story of immigration. It's the story of a people seeking refuge, a story of a people seeking safety and the ability to live with dignity, not as slaves, not as second-class citizens. And it's the same desire for a better life for one's family and one's community that drives the 11 million undocumented families and people who are living in this country today, and the millions of people who are allies to those undocumented people in this historic struggle. And part of what we learn in the Passover story is how profound it is to finally be a liberated people. And with that freedom, what responsibility and obligation then we inherit once we become free. I feel motivated, I feel optimistic, because there are so many of us at this moment who do have the power to make this change. We do have the power to pressure our elected officials to bring this critical issue to a vote. And one way we can do that is to support a discharge petition that is being launched today. Today there's going to be a petition that will help pressure members of the House to put a vote on immigration reform to the floor of the House so that we can actually see this movement and see this issue gain some traction. And if we see that the House votes affirmatively, we already know that there's been bipartisan support in the Senate, and this is the time that we can truly win on comprehensive immigration reform.
Do you see a critical mass of activism on immigration reform forming? There are such original and prophetic activists from across the faith spectrum committed to this issue.
Absolutely. I mean, this is an issue, first of all, that is not new. People have been active on this issue for decades and decades, and I would say for since there have been immigrants in this country who have not experienced the dignity and safety that our immigration system should provide. Our immigration system is currently broken. It is not only broken, it is actually immoral and unjust and cruel. So there have been decades of experiences and of people who have committed their lives to getting immigration reform, comprehensive immigration reform at this moment. I see people taking action in incredibly brave ways with the Dreamers, with people who are fasting. Ben the Ark participated in a fast with over 100 other faith leaders, including leaders from the Muslim Public Affairs Committee, where we, in solidarity with other immigrants, are fasting and demonstrating to our elected officials and to our society at large that the time has come. People are doing brave and courageous acts of civil disobedience. People are speaking about this issue on the pulpits in their congregations. People are talking about this on Facebook with their friends. There is momentum, and we must act now. It is possible for this to happen soon, but it will not happen unless each one of us takes our part and does our piece to make it so.
Say again precisely what you want to see Congress do.
Specifically, we would like to see the House of Representatives vote on a bill, on Bill 15, in support of immigration reform. American Jews believe that now is the time to pass immigration reform that is comprehensive, that's compassionate, that's just, and that this is the moment to do so. There is no reason why this bill cannot come to the floor for a vote. And part of what Ben the Ark is doing is creating a petition for Jews across the country to sign on that we can bring to House Leader Eric Cantor during a meeting that he's having with some members of the Jewish community on April 3rd. We invite all of you who are Jewish to sign that petition, to share your concern and your hope for serious comprehensive immigration reform, and lend your power and name so that Leader Cantor knows that the Jewish community is in full support of comprehensive immigration reform getting done now.
I'm being intentionally redundant. You're gathering these signatures to present to Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us again how our listeners can get involved. You want Jews across America signing this. How do they do it?
Yes. So So Jews across America can join us by going to www.entrydenied.org. That's the place where you can sign your name to this petition that will be received by Leader Cantor in just a few weeks. For all of our listeners, though, if you're interested in learning more about the discharge petition, please visit our website, which is www.bendthearc.us, and that is BendTheArc.us. And the name, just so folks know, comes from a beautiful quote that was made famous by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And his quote was, "The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice." And we at Bend the Arc could not agree more with that sentiment. And we also believe that the arc does not bend on its own, that all of us, each one of us, has a role to play, and together we can bend that arc more quickly towards justice.
Let me also say that related to gathering these signatures, this program, as all of our listeners know, encourages interfaith cooperation. So if you're Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, or of another tradition, and you know some Jews and you talk to them regularly, ask them if they've signed, and if they haven't, tell them they need to sign this petition.
Yes, thank you.
As a CEO, how do you decide what gets priority out of a long list of initiatives that are under the watch and in the programs of Bend the Arc?
Yeah, it's a great question. Bend the Arc believes that there is a pressing need for an unabashedly progressive national Jewish organization that focuses on the most pressing issues facing our country at this time. And those issues include immigration reform. They include voting rights. We just launched an incredible voting rights campaign last month. They include LGBT equality. They include worker justice. We believe that our community can and really must be asking ourselves, what is the value add that the Jewish community can play in creating more justice and more equality in this country? And our community is so blessed because we have a significant amount of resources. We came to this country extremely impoverished. We have firsthand experience of discrimination. And through that experience, we know then that it is our sacred obligation to give back. And in our history in this country, we have now an incredible array of cultural capital. We have an intellectual depth and a level of thought leadership that can be valuable. We have a level of financial wealth that we believe should be put to good use. And we have spiritual technologies, just like so many other beautiful faith communities have, that can help us find our way in some of these most critical, pressing, really ethical issues of our time. Taken together, we believe that those collective resources must be brought to bear on the most significant issues that are facing our country and the people who are most vulnerable and who are disproportionately impacted by those issues. That's the focus of our work, and that's how we decide what really needs our attention and gets our priority.
Stosh Kotler is CEO of Bend the Arc, a Jewish partnership for justice. They're currently gathering signatures to present to House Majority Leader Eric Cantor on April the 3rd, calling for action on comprehensive immigration reform. You can be a part of this initiative by going to entrydenied.org. Stosh, you've certainly got your work cut out for you. It's vitally important work. I'm glad you're doing it. You and I have a lot to talk about off the air and on the air, and I'm assure you that we will be inviting you back on to State of Belief Radio very soon because we want to hear more about your important work.
Oh, well, thank you so very much for having me, and such a fan of your show. So thank you so much.
I share a special history with Mike Papantonio years ago as the Air America Radio Network was making waves all across the country. Two of the national programs launched there were Ring of Fire, hosted by Pap and Robert Kennedy Jr., and our show, State of Belief. Since the network's collapse, some of the programming disappeared. Some grew into projects like The Rachel Maddow Show on MSNBC and Tom Hartman on RT, which I should note, Pap has been known to guest host and to be on a lot. Ring of Fire and State of Belief have continued as syndicated radio programs, and if I may say so, there's a lot to be gained from tuning in to both of them every week. The political, cultural, and legal analysis that Pap offers his listeners is absolutely second to none, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back to State of Belief Radio. Pap, it's great to see you.
Well, it's nice for our reunion here. It has been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, and I miss the conversations. Just do a really narrow question. When you look at the political landscape, what's your sense about what's ahead of us this year?
Well, I think midterms is going to be, it's going to be a fight for, the Democrats have a fight on their hands because, you know, Nate Silver, just as you, I'm sure, well aware, came out just a week or so ago and said that the Democrats' chances of losing the Senate are pretty high. And he didn't just say that because, it's not like betting on a football game. Nate has a really good system where he goes back and he looks at the history. He says, what are the elements that we have now that historically we've had in the past and what has it meant for Democrats? And one thing is you've got an economy that people are not sure about. It's not that it's necessarily a bad economy because it's slowly improving. But that is not the message out there. The Republicans have done a good job keeping it down as much as they can. The second thing is, when you have a president that doesn't have all that great of favorables, right now, at the end of March, you had a president with favorables about a 41% approval rating, which that's a problem for a president. Mm-hmm. Add those two things together, going into midterms where historically Democrats don't show up and the Republicans do show up. You've got a lot of things the Democrats ought to be focusing on and worrying about. Democrats always say, look, you know what? We're going to have a big turnout. And that it never really does come to pass.
Yeah. Pap, what is the message for Democrats and what is the message for Republicans and how do you critique both of them?
Well, the message for Democrats that they seem so afraid of is that we really care about the average American. They've become so commandeered by Wall Street that they don't even have that brand or identity anymore. You've got a president that it made promises, made two rounds of promises. You're going to see change. You're going to see hope. I'm going to take care of Wall Street. They're not going to be running your lives like they do right now. I'm going to take care of the pharmaceutical industry. They're not going to do the things. I'm going to get control of the military-industrial complex. All this stuff we heard, we haven't seen him deliver. He's delivered on social issues that really are not bread and butter issues. Social issues like gender rights and racial issues, they're very important, don't get me wrong. But where it comes to sitting around the dinner table and mom and dad are looking across the table at their children and they can't feed the children, they can't afford the house they're in, they can't get a college education for them, those are all things that a president could have taken care of without the help of Congress, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. And it simply hasn't been delivered. On the Republican side, they don't believe the autopsy report that told them that the people hate them. I mean, that across the board, whether it's women, whether it's minorities, whether it's millennials, that they have some real cretin identity problems. And so they were told that by the study that they paid for, a very expensive study they paid for, and said, we have to fix these problems. And then almost as soon as the words came out, they started doing just the opposite of what the autopsy report told them they should do.
How central is the Affordable Care Act in what happens in Congress?
Well, I think for Democrats to run away from it is insane. To say that we can't stand behind this, well, then what they fail to do, Democrats are not very creative thinkers. I mean, they're even less so than Republicans, and I hate to say that. I'm not a Democrat, and I certainly am not a Republican. I'm an independent. But when I look at the creative thought that goes into both of these parties, The Democrat, if they were being creative, they would simply wrap the Affordable Health Care Act in with things like Social Security, in with safety net issues that people do care about. And right now, that idea that, gee whiz, we have to give up everything so billionaire corporations can make more money by paying less taxes, People aren't buying into that anymore. Democrats still don't get that. I call it the Beltway mentality, Weldon. It's they're in the midst of that Beltway every day. They don't know what middle America is talking about. And if they would stand behind, we care about populist social issues, they would win. They won't do it. They have terrible advisors. They have generally don't have the courage to stand behind big ideas like that.
How much will they be hurt, the Democrats, that is, I guess, and the Republicans also, at the failure of immigration reform?
The Republicans can't be hurt anymore by the way that they're regarded by minorities in this country, certainly by the immigrant minorities. Immigrant minorities realize that for years they feel a kinship with the militant attitudes that exist in primary immigration states, whether it's Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico. They're never going to change that. I think so. Republicans are going to be hurt less by saying, you know what, we're going to stand by what we say. We don't believe that this open borders is a good idea. They're not going to be hurt by that because they've already lost that vote anyway. The people who are going to be hurt are the Democrats. If you've seen this message that's been coming out, the number of deportations that this president has been involved with has been record level.
Yeah.
There's been no president that's deported as many immigrants as Obama. If I were a Republican, that's what I'd be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I would be saying, you know what? We at least state what we believe. Here's a president that talks out of both sides of his mouth, says this on one day. On day two, he's deporting the very people that he says that he cares about.
You know, Pep, I know you well enough to know that you're one of the best in understanding this whole battle between religion and politics and how politicians have used religion. But we saw those two collide again this past week in the Supreme Court, and I've really been eager to hear what your take is on the Hobby Lobby case.
Yeah, the Hobby Lobby case is interesting in that the Supreme Court will not make a ruling that moves the ball to the point to say that a corporation has a constitutional religious protection. They won't do that, not because they don't want to do that. They won't do that because corporate America will not allow them to do that. If you'll notice on the Hobby Lobby case, there were no amicus briefs filed by the Fortune 500 companies. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce did not line up behind the Hobby Lobby religious argument. There's a very good reason for that. If the U.S. Supreme Court comes out and says that we believe that the separateness of the owner of a corporation and the corporation itself is no longer existing, that the Green family that owns Hobby Lobby, that the corporation, the Hobby Lobby, takes on the politics and the religion of the Green family, then what ends up happening is that corporation can be sued along with the Green family. Used to be that the corporation would provide a separation and some insulation for the Green family that owns the Hobby Lobby. Mm-hmm. They'd say it's a different entity. You can sue the corporation, but you can't sue the Greens. When you do away with that veil, that separateness between corporation and the person, then you're going to see individuals, shareholders, CEOs being sued the same way the corporation's being sued. So the Supreme Court will not go there on religious grounds and constitutional grounds. But they still may fine for Hobby Lobby, but it'll be on something less intrusive and a little more technical.
Well, I feel better hearing you say that. Not that I want them to win at all, but I feel better about that. I'm also interested in your comment on all of this newfound passion for religious freedom, but nobody knows what it means.
Yeah, well, nobody understands religious freedom because it is what it wants to mean to them that day.
Exactly.
And when we look at religious freedom, first of all, to have Scalia analyze, to have Clarence Thomas or Scalia, and even Alito and Kennedy, maybe not so much Roberts, but to have the rest of them pontificating about what religious freedom means is a joke in and of itself. It's almost black humor.
Right.
When you go back and look at their decisions. So religious freedom doesn't have anything to do with a corporation. A corporation is anything but religious. The only religion a corporation understands is the religion of money. How do we put more money in our pockets? There's nothing about morality or ethics. It has nothing to do with what we find in Matthew, with what we found by the teachings of Jesus. Jesus ran them out, ran them out of the temple. Jesus rejected all of that. And right. So there's no common ground there.
You're on the cutting edge of independent media. How would you diagnose the health of the media that are informing people regarding democracy?
What's happening right now is when we started, you started this program talking about what an endeavor we started with Air America. Right. I don't remember how many years ago. Look at what came out of that, Weldon. What came out of it is the body of Air America itself was no longer in existence. But look what everybody moved on to. Mm-hmm. Ed Schultz, Rachel Maddow, Tom Hartman, you, Sam Cedar, me, Bobby Kennedy. You could go on forever. They all went. They all went their way, and they all understood this, that corporate media as a news entity, as a real information entity, is dying. There was a time in corporate media when you had 57 corporations that owned the media in general. Now 4 corporations own all of the media, and what that means is they've looked at the world of media as again the bottom line, which means news doesn't exist, investigative journalism doesn't exist, real analysis outside the beltway doesn't exist. Now you've got plenty of beltway analysis inside corporate media. Mm-hmm. The average American doesn't care about beltway analysis. They care about the things we're talking about right now.
What's next?
I think what's next is you're going to find you're going to find more and more radio, the traditional radio, being less and less influential. Terrestrial radio is going to become far less influential. As a matter of fact, if even satellite radio, if they're not careful, is going to become far less influential where it comes to political messaging. Now, for music, satellite mm-hmm. radio is certainly has a big future. But I think you're going to see organizations like Progressive Voices, very important new organization mm-hmm. that takes the composite of all liberal media, puts it on where people can find it, and rather than saying we want to sell you a podcast, you have one site where you can go to you go to your show, our show, you can go to virtually any show that talks about progressive messages mm-hmm. and get it out there. Free Speech TV is a great example. Mm-hmm. I started with Free Speech TV with our program with Ring of Fire about a year ago. The results has been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. That's the only way I can describe it. Just mm-hmm. phenomenal results because people are hungry for it. The Free Speech TV exists in an area where it's primarily rural. They hear Rush Limbaugh. They hear Mike Savage. They hear Laura Ingraham. They hear all the hate talkers. And then all of a sudden comes this television show that's stuff they've never heard before. And every week we're inundated with emails. Thank you for this. I've never thought about this. The only thing I can listen to is Fox and Rush Limbaugh. It's frying my brain. Thank you for an alternative. And these are people that would probably call themselves at least moderately conservative.
Mike Papantonio is a radio and television host, an entrepreneur, and a successful trial lawyer, and I am glad to say a really good friend of mine. As host of Ring of Fire Radio, he's demonstrated how fiercely independent media can have a real impact on the public discourse in our country. Pap, it's always great to talk with you. I get a lot in a short amount of time and always want more. And so maybe that'll happen in the near future.
Thank you, Will. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your generous support is essential in helping to make this show possible. Please visit stateofbelief.com and consider making a contribution today. We'll use it wisely, I promise, to keep State of Belief on the air and to expand the reach of this program. Every week, we hear from listeners across the country who say they rely on our show for the kind of inclusive, respectful approach to interreligious dialogue they can't find anywhere else. Stateofbelief.com is where you'll find out more about the show, hear extended interviews, watch in-studio videos, read transcripts, and sign up for our podcasts. Please stay in touch with us throughout the week. You can do that on Facebook and Twitter. The listener line is 202-681-4246. Of course, we encourage you to tell others about the show and encourage them to listen. And join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, he walked, he walked.